Tech Talk on RNIB Connect Radio.
Hello, and a very warm welcome to Tech Talk from RNIB Connect Radio. First heard each Tuesday lunchtime at 1, again at Thursdays 9 p.m, and Saturday tea time at 5. If you prefer a podcast, just ask your smartphone or smart speaker to play the latest episode of RNIB Tech Talk. Of course, Tech Talk, it's our opportunity as blind and partially sighted people to come together and learn about the world of accessible or sometimes inaccessible technology. We're always keen to hear from you here on the programme. Why not drop us a line or a voice note to techtalk@rnib.org.uk. That's techtalk@rnib.org.uk. This week, we'll be learning about how virtual reality is being made more accessible to blind and partially sighted people by VR Oxygen. We'll also be learning more about Apple's State of Mind feature found within the Health app and a new app trial for people with macular degeneration. That's all coming up on this episode of Tech Talk. Welcome in to the Tech Talk crew, Tasni Marshad, Callum Stoneman and Hubert Pavalkovich. Hello, everybody.
Hello.
Hello.
Hello. Got a full house.
We have indeed a full house. It is crowded. Let's have a quick round the room then and just see how your week in technology is shaping up. Callum Stoneman, let's come to you first. What's on your mind this week?
Well, I think the big news of the last couple of weeks, I don't know if we spoke about this yet, but Be My AI is now available to everyone. So if you download the Be My Eyes app, you no longer have to go on to a waiting list, I believe. You'd have to join the beta kind of waiting list. You can just go on to Be My Eyes, sign up if you haven't already got the account there, and you should see at the bottom the Be My AI tab if you're on iOS. I think Android is now on a beta stage. So I think Android, there's a waiting list available that I haven't tested that out yet. But on iOS, it's now publicly available. Now, this is classed as an open beta. What that basically means is they've got it as good as they can for now, I guess. Still not perfect. Still, you know, usual rules apply with AI and with any kind of OCR or image recognition technology. You know, don't rely on it for anything too critical, but if you want to use it, it should now be available for you.
Yes, indeed. And we have demonstrated the feature here on Tech Talk, but I think it's worth mansplaining that you do need to download the Be My Eyes app, because I know some people have been searching the App Store for Be My AI, haven't they?
Yes. No. So it is part of the Be My Eyes app. So you download that, and then you've got on the home screen, you've got the Call a Volunteer, which does the video call. The specialized help, which is where you can find things like the Google accessibility and Microsoft Disability Answer Desk and all the other kind of companies that have partnered with Be My Eyes. But then down at the bottom, where you've got your tabs at the bottom, I can't remember what they all are, but there is one there that says Be My AI, and that's what you're looking for.
Indeed, yeah. And you don't have to take your picture from within the app. You can use an existing picture and share that through the share sheet and then choose describe with Be My Eyes. So let us know how you get on with that. Some incredible descriptions coming out. And people using them now to tag up their social media posts as well, which is wonderful, isn't it? You know, yeah, you're getting photos with these glorious descriptions. So, yeah, do let us know how you get on with that. And, of course, it will continue to develop and evolve. Tasni Marshad, what have you got for us this week?
Yeah, very well, exactly the same as Callum, actually. He's beaten me to it. Yeah, so a friend of mine who's totally blind has actually tested, was using this this feature on Be My Eyes, and she was sharing that with me and just said how wonderful the descriptions were. I think she was interested in knowing what her cat was up to, took a picture, and it gave her a really detailed description of the cat nosying in her fruit bowl. So, yeah, she was very impressed with it.
Now, Hubert Pavalkovich, you and I have recently visited the United States, and I wonder if you, like me, found that it was a bit odd that you can't use Apple Pay everywhere, can you?
No, I mean, paying in the United States in general is very interesting. I My Apple Pay luck has not been too bad, but there have been places where either Apple Pay didn't work or even card didn't work. So it's an interesting one.
It is. Yeah. But lots of other technology working well over there. So anything else on your technology radar this week, Hubert?
So this is a Google-related news. I was alerted to. A friend sent me a link to this where you can actually become a trusted accessibility tester for Google products that you can sign up to. This is run by Google, and they are looking for testers mainly from US, Canada, and United Kingdom. But you can actually test Google products, and that can be Google apps such as Gmail or YouTube, for example, or Google products themselves. Which is quite an interesting one, and I've signed up to it. And if you like testing your technology and helping to make technology more accessible, I've seen this around. That's something I've picked up, which I thought stood out for me.
That's the key thing, isn't it? If you like testing your technology, it feels like we've all become beta testers these days. Doesn't anybody finish anything before they release it?
I mean, on one hand, it's one of these where I'd like to see a finished product, but I also love to see, you know, blind and partially sighted people being involved in developing technology and contributing towards technology developing and improving. So I guess there's two ways of looking at it.
Yeah, it's a good point.
I guess it depends for me how they do it. You know, like going back to the Be My AI thing, they made it very, very clear that it was beta. You know, and you had to get beta testers for that. You had to get real users beta testing it. I think what bugs me is when they put products out and we find accessibility problems and, you know, we get in touch with the developers and they go, oh, well, yeah, we were aware of that, but, you know, we...
Nobody would do that, would they, Callum? Anyway, look, let us know how you feel about testing stuff when it's new. Or I mean, Tasnim, you're somebody that generally you kind of wait.
Yeah, so... Yeah, I do like to, with regards to the Apple, but I do agree with Hubert. You know, Callum, I think it's really important that obviously blind and partially sighted people are involved in the whole testing process, because obviously the more you test, the more feedback you get, the more you can finalise your product. And I think even after you've finalised your product and it's as good as you can get, having further feedback of how you can improve it, making new features, I think all of it is really essential.
Yeah, well, and there will be those who say that if you're testing something, you should be getting paid for that testing.
Agreed.
Yeah, that I do agree with. But yeah.
To clarify with the Google testing, if you also do testing for Google, actually, you've just reminded me, you do get a gift card as well for your testing. So in this case, this is actually something where it will bring you potentially some reward for doing testing.
Ah, beautiful.
Have you got a link for us, Hubert? Check out those show notes. We will make sure to include the link there. Well, stick around, everybody. It's another Tech Talk.
Now, a big topic that's been coming up quite a lot is VR, or virtual reality. And this is something that's becoming very much a hot topic, particularly in the gaming industry, it seems. And companies like Meta, so, you know, the company behind Facebook and WhatsApp and Instagram, they have gone into VR with their latest range of products, the Meta Quest headset. But I think it's fair to say that this is maybe a little bit lost on blind people. I know for me, as someone who's totally blind, I feel a bit confused and a bit, I guess, shut out of all this, because, you know, it's very much a visual focus. But there is a company out there who are maybe looking to change that. I'm joined now by Olga Ivanova, who is the founder of VR Oxygen. Olga, thanks for joining us. Do you want to just tell us first about yourself and about VR Oxygen?
Yeah, thank you, Callum. Thank you for having me today. And hi, everybody. So VR Oxygen helps VR companies find VR users for VR playtesting and research, as well as organize and conduct VR accessibility testing or VR user testing remotely. We find people who own or have a reliable access to a VR headset and who belong to a target audience. So these can be people of very different profiles, which is very different for every particular VR game or experience. And speaking about accessibility in particular, we help find VR players to participate in studies about visual, physical, audio, and cognitive accessibility. And to say something about me, I've been active in VR since 2014 as a community builder and game creator. From 2014 to 2017, I organized a monthly VR event, SFVR, that grew to 800 regular attendees. It was at the time the biggest VR event in San Francisco. And in 2015 and 2016, SFVR joined forces with SVVR, and we organized VR Mixer during GDC. It's a big conference. It was called VRDC, and we had over 1,000 attendees at that time. I also created VR heuristic evaluation tool in 2016. It was the first self-evaluation tool for VR developers before Meta created its VR check guidelines. It was built based on my hands-on experience with game development, product design, research, and feedback from other VR developers. And it included accessibility as well back then. And my contribution to the VR community was sharing my expertise to help create the VR playtesting guide, which can be found on Meta's Oculus developer website.
I feel like we should probably take a step back a little bit, because as I said, I think up until now, VR has sort of been a little bit, it's not really been a subject that I feel that blind and partially sighted people can really get involved in. So I think it might be helpful to just kind of talk a bit about VR generally. You know, what is it? Who is it for? How do you use it, basically? You know, what sort of hardware do you need?
So VR is really for everyone, or it is supposed to be. And hopefully it will be for everyone and accessible for everyone.
I guess that's the key, isn't it?
Yeah, that's the key. Yeah, that's supposed to be. Because there are so many opportunities, and especially for people with disabilities, it can be a way to access what was not accessible before. And experiences can include really anything from travel, attending certain events, concert, meeting with people. There are a lot of social VR apps, VR for productivity, for work, to collaborate with other people, to use tools to build VR experience yourself, training, rehabilitation, education, and of course, entertainment and gaming. In order to play a VR game, you would need a VR headset. There are, I think, over 60 VR headsets on the market right now, and it's growing. But the most popular is by Meta, Meta Quest 2, and Meta Quest 3 is coming, is launching soon. Then also PlayStation VR, PlayStation VR 2. And what we've heard from participants, it was more accessible than Meta's headset. So it can be a standalone headset, Meta Quest 2, Quest 3, Quest Pro, Pico 4, and many others headsets. It can be a PC VR headset that would require a VR-capable PC. It can be Quest 2 or Quest 3 still, but with AirLink, but actually preferably with cable link and stable Wi-Fi. Or it can be HTC Vive, Valve Index, and there are also many other PC VR headsets and console like PlayStation VR and PS5. So for PC VR, it's recommended to have a VR-capable PC, and it may vary by game, actually. So it's a little bit specific to a game.
Yes, I mean, I guess most modern kind of gaming PCs really would be powerful enough for, mm-hmm. for this sort of tech. So, I mean, going back to like the current state of it, because we, as you said there, it's something that's supposed to be available for everyone. Mm-hmm. But what would you say is the current state of it for, from a blind and partially sighted point of view? You know, what can it currently offer mm-hmm. blind and partially sighted people?
VR accessibility is in its early days because VR is relatively new. And even though some VR games include accessibility options and inclusive design practices, VR is still restrictive for people with low vision or totally blind, unfortunately. But inclusive design practices are being explored to make VR accessible for all. And and XR studio Alchemy Labs has been pioneering accessibility in VR games. Their well-known games are Job Simulator and Vacation Simulator, and these games are accessible for legally blind and for people with low vision. And their newest VR game, it's a VR adventure game, Cosmonios High, has a vision accessibility update to help people who are legally blind and low vision. And this is what they worked on in this game, is a really state of the art of VR accessibility of modern days. It's not in, if speak about VR accessibility for totally blind users, it's not ready yet, but we are going towards this direction. So that's why we need more people to participate in studies to help developers build accessible games. But Cosmonios High has such features like customizable text-to-speech, descriptions for every interactable object, descriptions for navigation. When you are moving around, so it will tell you where you are pointing at, for example. So the locomotion inside is you would use teleport instead of freely roaming. And wherever you point, you would get a description where you are pointing at. And you can move between spaces, and you would also have haptic vibration whenever you move from space to space, and sound confirmation. And also, it's interesting that there are very specific interactions. For example, if you want to hear, I think it was about repeating what a character said, so you can wave to them like in real life, and they would repeat it. So VR is very different from web and mobile. It's more like real life with similar to real life affordances, but it's also not limited to that. So yeah, as I said, unfortunately, the games are not fully ready for totally blind people. However, the research is being done for future developments. And there have been a lot of discoveries that wouldn't be possible without testing with people from the actual target audience who would actually benefit from using these features. For example, we learned that there needs to be more feedback from the physical world, specifically for totally blind players, to help with orientation and navigation in the world.
Yeah, that was really interesting.
Yeah, I also wanted to mention that actually the headsets themselves are not accessible for totally blind users, even though the games are more accessible than the headset, and but particularly this game. So it was a challenge with testing it, because we would need, the participants would need someone to help them launch the game, because on MetaQuest 2, it's not, launching their application is not accessible. But if the game is launched, totally blind users can activate the low vision mode themselves. So for this, they need, no one needs any assistance, neither totally blind user nor users with low vision or legally blind.
Yeah, I see what you mean. So that leads me on quite nicely, actually, to what you guys at VR Oxygen are doing. So do you want to just share more details about, so how can VR Oxygen help blind and partially sighted people get involved with this, get involved with the testing and the research into the accessibility of VR?
We'd love to have more blind people and people with low vision and total blindness get involved in these studies to help build accessible experiences. But right now it's somewhat chicken and the egg challenge, because there are not many people with low vision who own a VR headset, and even less, smaller number of people who are totally blind who own a headset, because the headset is not accessible. But we were able to find people who own the headsets. And also, as I mentioned, some of the VR users, they were able to help their relatives who are blind and who are interested to participate. So we are incredibly thankful for this help. It's not easy finding people who already own a VR headset, who are blind or have a visual impairment or who are legally blind. And why we are looking for this particular profile, because we want to hear from people with different experiences and who may belong to a specific target audience, because people with the same disability, they may have different experiences based on the game genre, for example. Because not everybody with total blindness or low vision may like the same genre of the game, for example. So everybody has their own experiences and expectations. So there are a lot of layers, yeah, of complexity.
Yeah, and I mean, I can see the challenge there, to be fair, because it's that catch 22 when accessibility isn't done from the start, isn't it? That people aren't going to have the equipment because it's not accessible, but then that makes it harder for actual research and testing and feedback to be given to the companies and to the developers. I guess one thing is, if there's someone who maybe is listening to this and is blind and they don't have a headset, but they have a family member or a partner or something that does, could that work for them? Could they still participate in that way?
Yeah, absolutely. That would be amazing. And we had some people who offered this type of help and collaboration. Yeah, absolutely. That would be awesome. So definitely, if you own a VR headset, or if you have a family member, a relative, or a friend who can help you access the VR headset and who can give you VR headset, yeah, definitely, you are very welcome to participate. There will be many different studies and tests in the future for everybody, for people with low vision, for totally blind users, and for legally blind users. But for right now, for this specific round, we are looking totally blind people who have access to VR headset. But just want to say that everybody is welcome to sign up, everybody who has a vision impairment. But these test rounds are separated because the features are different for example, for totally blind users and for users with low vision. I want to share a little bit about the process. First, you can sign up on the website, on our website, or for this specific study, if you can participate as a totally blind VR user, we have a specific link we can share. subscribepage.io/VR02blind study. So this will lead you directly to the sign up page. And the process is, so people submit this form. We get some information about their vision, and the game developers can see they fit the profile they're looking for. As I again said, we welcome everybody to join, but the tests are usually separated by disability type because the features are different. For example, for legally blind and people with low vision, there are two different groups for roughly saying nearsighted and farsighted users with different levels of blur and vision obstruction. And there is one more separate test round for totally blind users, which is currently ongoing. And there will be more test rounds in the future. Then the second step would be NDA, signing an NDA. There would be also a background check for this test. Then based on your availability, we would schedule a call, and the game developers will give you access to the latest version of the game to do remote tests from your home. It would be a live stream when you play the game live, sharing your VR view so that they can see what you see from a first person, and the game developers can observe what you play, so they can see how you play. I mean, so they can see your behavior and understand if anything is confusing. Sometimes, you know, it's possible to see your reaction to understand if something is unclear or fun. And you would be communicating with people who work on this game while they observe what you do in VR. After the playtest, there is an interview to get your feedback, and usually a post-play survey. So the live stream test itself, this all is included in the live stream test. The post-play survey is separate. But the legislative test is about 1 hour and a half maximum, and sometimes less.
And that's good to know that this is a from home study as well. So there's not any to worry about getting to a specific location or, you know, working out things like that. This is all done from home as well.
Yeah.
Okay, fantastic.
Yeah, we will help with every step. So no need to worry if you haven't done a live stream before. We have all the process ready for you to, we will assist you with this.
If people want to find out more about VR Oxygen in general and maybe want to get in contact, where can people go to find that?
You can go to our website, VROxygen.com. There are case studies. You can read about what we've done. And you are welcome to contact us. There is a contact email, or you can, I think the best would be if you have any questions and if you'd like to participate, but anything is unclear, just send me an email to Olga, O-L-G-A, at VROxygen.com.
And before I let you go, I just wanted to, I think you've kind of touched on this already, but what are your hopes for the future of VR and, you know, specifically in the accessibility context?
We hope that more VR games will be accessible to everyone, to the legally blind people, people with low vision and totally blind users. And VR Oxygen provides all the resources for VR companies to be able to find VR users of the right profile for every type of accessibility feature. So they can ensure that what they are building is actually what people need. And hopefully there will be more customization for more disability types for in the future. Because what I mean by the types, because low vision is a spectrum, and it also is very different for different users with different vision blur or vision obstruction. It's not as straightforward, actually, creating features for people with vision impairments as it may seem. That's why it's really important to test with actual users to confirm that what was built is what people really need. I also hope that having accessible VR games and experiences will influence and help improve the accessibility of headsets. Because at some point, when there will be more accessible VR games, it will be just weird to not have accessible headsets. So hopefully it will help as well. I know it's not accessible enough for people who are totally blind right now, but it's a very good start. And we hope that soon players with total blindness will be provided with accessible tools that they wouldn't need the assistance from people, from sighted people.
No, fantastic. That is great stuff.
You're very welcome to sign up to join our future studies. And if you are a person who has a VR headset or have access to a VR headset, maybe your friend or relative has a VR headset and can give it to you, please sign up as well. We'd love to have you, to hear your feedback. And it's really that important. You will really help shape the accessibility of VR experiences and games, because all these features are built based on the feedback that participants provide. So the feedback, everything you share will be incredibly valuable for the team, for game developers.
There you go. If you're interested in helping to shape the future of VR accessibility, then this is definitely worth getting involved in. Olga from VR Oxygen, thanks so much for joining us on Connect Radio.
Thank you, Colin. Thank you for having me today.
Apple this year with iOS 17 has taken steps towards letting you look after and track your mental health. You've always had an option to use the mindfulness app on the Apple Watch to do a breathing exercise or reflect, but now you have a few options that are already coming in or will be coming later in iOS 17. So at the moment, you have State of Mind, which is a new feature in the health and mindfulness apps. on the phone and the watch respectively, but soon, hopefully, you will also have Apple's brand new journal app, which isn't yet released, but hopefully will come out soon as well. What I'm going to show you today is the state of mind feature, and it's a fairly small feature, but it allows you to keep an eye on your mood and how it changes from day to day and how to log it as well. It's a fairly simple process, so I will show you this now and show you how you can keep track of that sort of information. So I'm currently in the health app, and I have added state of mind to my favorites in the health app to make it a bit easier to locate without having to browse through all of the various activity types and various health data. So I will swipe through.
Selected. Environment. Selected. Headphone audio. Sleep. The 20th. State of mind.
So there
the
we go.
3rd of October.
State of
Today,
mind.
The 13th of October.
I'll
Cap. T.
Tap on that and...
Calendar button. Today. Summary. Back. State of mind. Heading.
Take us to the top of the screen.
Calendar button. Today. The 13th. Log button.
So there is a log button. So what we are going to now look at is how to log a state of mind and what sort of information you can provide.
Log button. Health cancel button.
So we will double tap.
State of mind logging. Image. Log an emotional mood. Selected. Emotion. How you feel right now. Button. Log an emotional mood. Selected. Emotion. How you feel right now. Button.
So you can do this, which is kind of how you're feeling at this precise moment. And if you have this set up, you will actually get a reminder about 3 o'clock or something like that throughout the day to ask you to log how you are feeling right now. Next to that, you have...
Mood. How you've felt overall today. Button.
How you feel overall today. So you can log the two types of data, but technically they both ask you for the same questions. So there's not much difference between the two. So we're going to log how we're feeling right now and show you what exactly it can do.
Next button. Next button.
So that's the next button. So tap on that.
Next. Back button. Emotion. Heading. Cancel button. Choose how you're feeling right now. Neutral. Neutral. Adjustable.
So it says neutral, and you've got an adjustable picker there, so you can swipe up or down depending on how you're feeling. So I'll show you some of the options. Let's swipe up.
Slightly pleasant. Slightly pleasant. Pleasant. Very pleasant. Very pleasant.
So you have these options. Then we go down.
Very pleasant. Pleasant. Slightly pleasant. Slightly pleasant. Neutral. Slightly unpleasant. Slightly unpleasant. Unpleasant. Very unpleasant. Very unpleasant.
So they are fairly basic, but you can select whichever option you choose. So let's...
Very unpleasant. Unpleasant. Slightly unpleasant. Slightly unpleasant. Neutral.
Let's select neutral for the purposes of this demonstration.
Next button.
And tap on next.
Health. Neutral. Image. Neutral. What best describes this feeling?
So here you can choose a bit more detail and pick certain descriptive words that describe how you may be feeling.
Info. Button. Content. Button. Calm. Button. Peaceful. Button. Indifferent. Button. Drained. Button. Show more. Button.
So you can see more descriptive words if you want to find out some better descriptions, but for...
Drained. Indifferent. But peaceful. Button. Calm. Button. Content. Button.
For the purposes of this, we'll just select content. So you double tap.
Selected. Content.
And it now selects that option. So...
Calm. Button. Peaceful. But indifferent. Drained. But show more. Next. Button.
We tap next.
Neutral. Image. Neutral. Content. What's having the biggest impact on you?
So now you can choose certain things that are having a big impact on you right now. And this could be quite a few things, however many you want. So let's have a look at some options it gives us.
Info. Button. Health. Button. Fitness. Button. Self-care. Button. Hobbies. Button. Identity. Button. Spirituality. Button. Community. Button. Family. Button. Friends. Button. partner button, dating button, tasks button, work button, education button, travel button, weather button, current events button, money button, done button.
So you've got quite a few options here that you can choose from. So I'll go back and, for example, select work.
Money button, current event, weather button, travel, education, work button, selected, work.
There we go. We tapped on that. And let's swipe back to the right.
Education, travel, button, weather button, current event, money button, additional, done button, additional context, text field.
And you can add additional context here if you wish, some additional notes to the log. But if you don't want to,
done,
you can
button,
just tap done.
Done. Summary, back button.
And it's as simple as that. It's now been logged. So it's not a massive feature, and it's not a feature which you have to give a lot of information towards, but it's just a basic kind of tracker of your mood. So if you are suffering from particular mood swings and you're logging that, eventually there'll be patterns that will show you this, or trends that will show you if there are changes in your mood based on what information you are providing. So it's a very basic feature, but it is a little indicator and a bit of a tracker as to mood changes and such. I think it's a feature that will work pretty well with more mental health features and mental well-being features, but it's certainly a good start to Apple's ability to track more mental health. And I think the journal app will be even better if you are a person that likes to journal for mental health or for any other reason as well. That would be quite good, and it is something that I will show you when it becomes available on Tech Talk. So yes, have a look at the feature if you fancy it. Let us know, do you find it useful? Is it nothing major really? Is it something that's just a little gimmick, not really anything helpful? What is your opinion on this feature? I don't mind it. I will keep using it and see how long I'll last. But yeah, how do you feel about it? Let us know. techtalk@rnib.org.uk. But that was State of Mind.
Hubert Pavalkovich, thank you so much for your demonstration of the State of Mind feature now in Apple Health. Are you going to keep using this, Hubert?
I'll give it a go. I mean, it's a small, very small feature, but it is quite interesting to hopefully keep a look at patterns on how your mood's changing, how your mood's developing, or, you know, in which direction it's heading. So it's quite an interesting one. I think for me, it's more like a good step forward from Apple in regards to mental health after looking into all the other health areas beforehand.
Yeah, I mean, they have had an interest in this for some time. Of course, you've got the mindfulness on the watch, for example, where you can, you know, take a minute to breathe and reflect and all of that stuff. Let's bring in Tasneem and Callum Stoneman. Taz, how do you use technology to help your mood?
Well, for me, it has to be really reading. So Audible app, listen to music. And yeah, generally speaking, it has to be reading for me because that's my relaxation. That's my wind down. So yeah, very, very important for me. And obviously mental health, you know, I'm a clinician for the NHS. It's very much on my radar. It's my field. And I think obviously everybody's mental health is very essential, and how we look after it and take care of it, it's an absolute priority.
Callum Stoneman, technology, does it wind you up or calm you down?
Depends what I'm doing. I think the most I've done so far is just what we spoke about, was it last week or a couple of weeks ago, with the digital well-being, you know, being more selective than I normally would be with my notifications and setting up the focus modes. That's kind of as far as I've got for now with technology and mental health. But it is something that I want to start looking into more, because I've had a lot of stuff going on this year. The one that everyone knows about is kind of the loss of my guide dog. But then there's been other stuff going on in my personal life this year as well, which I'm not going to get into here. But there's a lot of stuff going on, let's just say, that's really just made me realize how important mental health is and how I need to be taking my own mental health more seriously. I'm looking forward to the journal app that's going to be coming soon. I think this kind of ties into the State of Mind thing with Apple. There is going to be a built-in journal app coming at some point in iOS 17. So that will allow you to just, I guess, give you a space to put in your thoughts, put in more detail about how you're feeling, and just give you an easy built-in place to take that down, you know, and I think that's going to be quite nice. That could be quite helpful. My wife has just put me onto an app called Balance, which does a lot of like breathing exercises, and, you know, it has things that help you wind down, things that can help you go to sleep, and, you know, exercises to help you reduce stress and things like that. And she's been loving that. I've tried it. It's reasonably accessible. So, you know, there is a lot out there. My employer as well have just given us given everyone who works for them a 12-month free subscription to Calm, which is another kind of meditation and, you know, relaxation app. So I'm going to be giving that a try.
Brilliant.
There's a lot out there.
The Calm app is one that we kind of share with people in the NHS as well. Obviously, it is subscribed, and some people, you know, are in a financial position to go with that, and some people are not. So I've heard that it's good, and there's so many apps out there. I mean, you can just put in relaxation into your app store and see what comes up and what's, you know, but it's very individualized. So I guess you really have to look at, you know, what works for you and what doesn't. And the other thing to just be mindful of is that all of this stuff that's available on mindfulness and the apps and the breathing, it's not for everybody. So you might not get along with it, but as long as you can find a relaxation technique that works for you, you know, whether that's exercise, whether that's reading, whether that's listening to music, whether, you know, a number of different things, I think that's the thing. It's very much about trial and error, and it isn't something that we are taught as children, because if you think about it, naturally we have playtime, then you have work time, you know, as you're kind of going through the educational system. But when you become an adult, it's all of that sort of playtime is totally lost unless you actively, you know, schedule it and build it into your diary. So, you know, very, very important to kind of explore that and to prioritize it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, all good points. And I mean, for me, of course, it's the exercise, right? And so actually, I know it sounds mad, but actually going out running is the thing that I find just rebalances me and settles me and, you know, helps me kind of reflect and actually being away from the technology a little bit. But also I do enjoy, you know, when I get back, you know, looking at the stats and seeing how it went and all that stuff. So great stuff. Well, let us know what technology helps your mood. Techtalk@rnib.org.uk. Hubert Pavalkovic, Callan Stone and Tasneem Arshad, thank you very much.
You're listening to RNIB Connect Radio. Digital health company Occo Health is calling for more volunteers to help test a new app, which could have a huge impact on eye care for people living with macular disease. Joining me now is Stephanie Campbell, founder of Occo Health. Thanks for speaking to us today.
Thank you very much for having me.
And before we talk about the trial itself, can you tell us a bit about the work of Occo Health?
Certainly. So what Occo Health is about is putting remote vision monitoring into the hands of people who live with eye disease. Because as an eye care professional myself, I trained as an optometrist in Cardiff, I really understand the need for patients not to have to go into a clinic every time they want to know how their vision's doing. And I fundamentally believe that just like diabetic care, when we put the ability to self-monitor into the hands of individuals, that we're going to have much better results, much better eye care, quite frankly. And I'm really excited about the change that that's going to bring to the whole eye care system, moving things from the clinic into the hands of people themselves.
And Occo Health has been working on a new app for people with macular disease. How does it work?
So this app is a medical app, and it goes on to straight onto the phone. There's no hardware. It's just a software app. And it's actually a little puzzle game, almost like a video game. Very, very simple. There is stuff that appears on the screen, some stuff just like an eye chart. Some stuff is easier to see and some stuff is harder to see. And the little puzzle is just about clicking everything that you can see on the screen. But we don't use letters. It's not like a normal eye chart. It's a lot more fun. It's like a little puzzle game. And so an individual who lives with macular disease will play that three times a week on each eye separately. So they cover up with a little eye patch the eye that they're not using and swap over, and play for about 5 or 10 minutes 3 times a week. And that collects lots of data about how they see. And that data is put into a graph. And so the patient and anybody who's looking after them can see that data over time. So instead of having a measurement of the vision, perhaps once every 2 months in the hospital, we're able to get measurements on a weekly basis.
What kind of impact do you think apps like this could have on the wider healthcare system in the UK?
My hope is that it will make it more efficient. Because what we know is that currently monitoring is happening really only in clinics, whether that's in optometrist practices or whether that's in hospitals. And by shifting that monitoring into the home, it's going to mean two things. First of all, that if a deterioration in the vision occurs, then we'll know more quickly. And that patient will be able to have their own data, understand there's been a change and be able to act on that change. And rather than ringing up their eye care professional and saying, you know, I think something's wrong, they'll be able to say something is wrong and I need an appointment. So that's the first thing. And the second thing is that I think that we will get to the point where when we have enough data that's reliable and trusted enough within the system, that we'll be able to do the opposite. And when people are doing well and their vision is stable, that we'll be able to reassure folk and say, actually, you know what? We can go longer without needing to go to hospital. And I think that's where the efficiency is going to happen, because we will make sure that the people who do need to be in eye clinics get there and get there when they need to be seen, and be able to keep people who don't need to be in eye clinics out of them.
And as we said, you're looking for volunteers to test the app. What's involved for testers?
So our testers sign up to our research program and they learn about what we're doing and are able to consent for their data to be used. And these patients will receive the app, we'll help them download it onto their phone and they register and they play 3 times a week. And then in addition to that, they might get questionnaires. They might be invited to online focus groups or to give us feedback via the phone. And yeah, we're really looking for real world feedback. Sometimes our volunteers will also let us know if they've been to the hospital. They might also log their symptoms. For example, we've got a new feature on the app where it's not just about measuring vision, but actually recording, of course, how the individual feels about how their vision is in the real world. And yeah, so it's not too onerous. And it's absolutely fine when patients go on holiday and they say, you know what, I'm going to take a break from doing this. But we do have a big community now of people who are regularly playing the app, sending us the data, and it's really teaching us so much about how people see in the real world and how people who live with eye disease see in the real world. And we're able to take that information. We're already feeding it back to doctors. And I have a really exciting example of that too.
And who's eligible to take part? Do you need a certain type of smartphone to join the test? Do you need a certain level of vision?
Yeah. So in terms of smartphone, we are looking for people who have an iPhone 7 and upwards. So just generally the modern iPhones, but also we also work on Android. So the majority of Androids are suitable. Of course, Android can, you know, it comes in many, many different varieties. And so we do a little check to make sure that it is compatible. But we're really getting there in terms of the ability for this to go on many, many different devices. In terms of eyesight, we are looking for people who have vision in at least one eye that is about a third of the way down the eye chart or better. So again, we're able to, so basically what we're finding is that people who are able to use a smartphone on a day-to-day basis and who use that for text messaging and stuff like that, usually those folk, their vision is suitable to be monitored by the app.
And is there a closing date to sign up? When does the trial itself actually finish? Do you have an end date in mind?
So the research participation is absolutely ongoing. So we would welcome anybody who would like to participate at any time. We have a very specific study going on in Nottingham Hospital and also in Oxford Eye Hospital, where we're building an algorithm, and that's specifically NHS recruitment. Now, that one is going to close in a couple of months. So if anybody's listening who's an Oxford Eye patient or a Nottingham Eye patient, you know, please do get in touch sooner rather than later. Get in touch during October.
You mentioned results. Are there results or specific trends that you've been able to identify so far using the results from the app?
Well, one of the most important learnings that we've had so far has come from looking at the data in combination with getting feedback from individuals who live with macular disease, who have said for some time, you know, my vision is better on some days and worse on other days. And this was something, as an eye care professional myself, that I thought, oh, that's not in the textbooks. And we were able to see that data in the graphs that we've produced. And so it seems to be that at least 50% of people do not have stable vision every single day. And when I began to spoke to ophthalmologists and optometrists about this, there was mixed opinions. And some people said, oh, actually, that makes sense. But because we only measure vision once every couple of months, you know, we don't have the opportunity to see this variability. And then other people said, no, I've never even thought about that before. Yeah, but that makes a lot of sense. So it's really interesting. It's really valuable to be able to generate these insights, put that back into the community of eye care professionals and say, you know what, the next time somebody says to you that their vision is better some days and worse than others, or maybe they've come in to see you for an appointment on a particular day and they say to you, my vision's not very good today, or my vision's better today than normal, that can be taken seriously. And that for me is like exactly what this is all about.
Well, how can people find out more information about Occo Health and the app trial?
Certainly. So people can go onto our website, which is www.occohealth.com. That's O-K-K-O health.com, and get in touch with us via our website. And we have a team of people who'd be very excited to take those inquiries. Well, I was going to say as well that it's completely free to take part in our research.
Well, it's a great chance for people to take part in something which could make a big difference to many people's lives. Stephanie Campbell, founder of Occo Health, thanks for speaking to us on RNIB Connect Radio.
Thank you so much, Joel. Thank you.
That's it. We are at the end of another Tech Talk. Thank you so much for your company. If you like what you heard, do tell a friend. And you can, of course, contact us in the usual way. It's techtalk@rnib.org.uk. But we are out of here. Tasnim Arshad, Hubert Pavalkovich, Callum Stoneman, thank you very much.
See you soon.
See you next week.
Thank you.
And from myself, Dave Williams, bye-bye.